Genesis 49, please. Genesis 49. Thank you. See, Christy, that's how it gets my attention. Lights coming off and on. Oh, it was my wife that shut them off. Time to go home. All right, we almost have all of the notes passed out, almost. Maybe I should have let Isaac do it, he's quicker. All right, let's all stand, we'll get you notes. We're going to look at Genesis chapter 49, and we'll look at verse 8 through 10. This is the prophecy of Jacob towards the end of his life. This message, by the way, folks, I have prepared three messages for on this subject so far. In the next couple of weeks, we'll deal with Luke, the beloved physician. Do you all know how many times he's mentioned in the New Testament? Mentioned by name. That's strange. Now, he wrote a gospel in the book of Acts, so he's kind of important. Remember, minor characters, major importance. We'll also deal with Demas down the road. Tonight is Judah. And unfortunately, the notes are long because it's a lot of story to talk about. And I've left out as much as I can. We're going to begin at the end of the story. Verse 8. Here is the prophecy given through Jacob. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. And Judah's name is related to praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thy enemy. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp, or the descendant of a lion is the idea. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? And then, of course, somewhat cryptic, but the prophecy. The scepter, the right to rule, shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. We're going to look at Judah the man. I'm going to try to stick with notes. Judah the man becomes very interesting. Everyone look at me. Because all of the kings of the south are descendants of Judah. But friend, have you read the story of Judah's life? There's something very deceptive about, not deceptive in a lying way, but the book of Genesis leads you down a path, and you think, if you're reading, you know where it's going, and then all of a sudden it goes in a totally different direction. Why? We're going to try to follow the story of Judah. Big picture, Judah the man. And when I say Judah, I do not mean this young lady over here. I do not mean any of the Judas in the New Testament that you call Judas, the Greek form of the name. I do not mean the book of Jude. We're talking about one of the 12 sons of Jacob. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time together as we look at this story. May it be helpful. That's my goal, to be very much of a help and a blessing, and to see, I think, your grace work in a man. I don't know how else to describe it other than your amazing grace. Help me as I share these ideas in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. We're going to do this quickly. The book of Genesis leads us down a long path, and this is not all of them, but of opposites, or if you prefer, antitheses. Plural. You have Cain and Abel. By the way, you could even say somewhat the serpent and Adam, but you have Noah and most of humanity. You have Abraham and Lot, our buddy. Yes. You have Isaac. Hi, Isaac. And Ishmael. We don't have an Ishmael in here. You have that, you know, antithesis. You have Jacob and Esau. And most of the latter part of the book is Joseph and his... Everybody look at me. I hope you hear this. Where in the world does Judah come from? Because I'm sorry to inform you, Judah was part of the problem. We will see directly he was part of the problem. So, how does that happen? That's kind of the kind of a strange thing. Well, let's look at the story of Judah. And by the way, there is no, you know, nothing weird here. Everything is just very straightforward. Number one, Judah was born into a problematic family. Can I ask everybody a question? Everyone look up here. Do not say one word about your family. Think, was your family the kind of family that you would choose to have been born in? Now, some of you should say yes. Some of you should be screaming. I doubt if your family was any worse than Judah's family. It's one of the most horrifying examples in the Bible of a family. Let's look. And I just give you a selection. You would need to read all of chapter 29 and all of chapter 30 to get the full story. Verse 24, Laban, which was a relative, gave unto his daughter Leah. Remember, he tricked Jacob. He promised Jacob Rachel. He gives Jacob Leah. And when he gives Jacob Leah, he also gives Leah's maid. For what purpose? Well, I think any of us with a brain know the purpose. He gave him Leah Zilpah, his maid, for a handmaid. Verse 28. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week 7 years and gave, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. So now I think, unless my math is bad, he has at least two wives. And we're going to find out he has some other things. Verse 29. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah. So now you have two wives and two, everybody, what? Concubine, kabit. And by the way, I want to say this. There is something that in this story, at the beginning of the story, when you read it, if you are listening, that's horrifying what Leah says about Jacob. And think yourself, what is Jacob doing with Leah, yet she still feels hated? He's using her like you use people. Don't read this in pious ways. Nothing pious about it. It's an ugly story, but let's read. Verse 31. And when the Lord saw, verse 30. And he went in also unto Rachel. I hate this stuff. And he loved also Rachel more than Leah. All right. Somebody out there with no mumbling, raise your hand. Tell me the two people in our church that grew up in polygamous homes. Now. Ade? Who else? Clovis. By the way, this is part of what Dave is talking about in Sunday school. We don't know anything about people. Clovis. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever talked to Ade about his experience in a polygamous home? Yes or no? He said he got to see his father twice a year for 15 minutes, and he thought that was a privilege. Because his mother, do any of you know the story, was one of the older wives, therefore one of the least favored wives. By the way, if you read this any way other than filth, you are missing the point. It's terrible. Well, we'll continue. Verse 31, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, that's pretty strong language because that's coming not from Leah, that's coming from the author. He opened her womb, but Rachel was barren, the idea being God didn't give her children. Verse 32, and Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. Why? For she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction now. Therefore, my husband will what? By the way, I'm going to say this gently. There's no children here. Well, there are, but I'll say it gently. Look at me. But he was having sex with her. repeatedly, while she knew he hated her. Do you? That's what I feel like doing, taking a shower and getting rid of the slop. I've had idiot people say, Pastor, it's not wrong to have more than one wife. Have you read the stories in the Bible? You don't have to pray about it. The stories are there to tell you, don't do this. We continue. It continues. Verse 33. She conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me. No, he wouldn't. Because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called, by the way, kind of important. By the way, two most important tribes in Israel. Judah. Where did they come from? Favorite wife, least favorite wife. Oh, if you don't see the grace of God and irony there, folks. Oh, my goodness. Let's continue. Let's see. Where am I at? Verse 35. She conceived again and bare a son. And she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah and left bearing. Friend, what do we find in this mess? Well, we find polygamy. Friends, remember this. Does the Bible teach against polygamy? Genesis chapter 2 is pretty clear. Look at me. One man, one woman for life. Not one man, five women, or any other combination are weird things that we do this day and age. We have polygamy. We have matrimonium. It appears that he actually married the two sisters. We have, this is a word, by the way, that's not used much in Latin, concubinage, but it's concubinium. They don't usually use this word. They use either the adjective for the man or for the woman. But you have both concubine and marriage. You also have favorites. Can I ask you a question? Do you think God is for you having favorites in your family unless, now, by the way, I have favorites in my family. I have a favorite son and I have a favorite daughter. Mike, you have a favorite daughter. Is that correct? Now, by the way, I also have a least favorite son and a least favorite daughter some days. Can you imagine growing up in a home where you know one person is favorite? We'll get to that a little bit later. By the way, the other brothers and sisters really like it if one kid, and I'm not talking about a joke. I'm talking about one is the favorite. Well, we continue. You also have conflict, jealousy, hatred. You have least favorites. Well, I missed the least favorite, excuse me. One of the things that bothers me the most is in chapter 30, verse 1 and 2, you know, Rachel doesn't have any children. She comes to Jacob and said, please give me children. And Jacob is just, and this is Ralph Warren's way of looking at it, clueless, at least for Jacob. I don't think Jacob got a piece of this. He's one of these guys into Jacob and into Jacob's trickery and chicanery and all of the things that Jacob is doing. He has a hard time realizing there's other people. Now, I have a question. What do you make of Zilpah and Bilhah? Think, what do you make of the two? Useful? Yes or no? I can't hear any of you. Do you read the same Bible I read? You have people that are being used. Period. Good grief. The things we will do. Well, don't have time to read it, but you also have good old-fashioned manipulation going on, too. There's things that go on with when all the children start growing up. They're manipulating for their own mother, and oh, it just gets ugly. This is an ugly story. That's where Jacob was born into. Now, what's our takeaway? Here's our takeaway. And by the way, our takeaway is dead serious. When you walk out of here tonight, you do not need to talk to anybody about your family. But if you couldn't stand up straight like a Christian and speak the truth, you're going to pass on all the filth you grew up in without blaming other people for your behavior. I'm talking about this is family, thoughts in your notes. We are all born into a family. That's a given of some variety. You say, my parents abandoned me. You were born into some kind of a family where parents abandoned you. That's what you were born into. You were born into a real family with weaknesses, gaps, and problems. And friends, there are no exceptions to that statement. I'll say it one time and move on. There are no exceptions. We're born into a real family with weaknesses, gaps, and problems. If you do, what do we call that? Where you take, oh, it's a hagiography. You make your mother or father or your family to be perfect. Every family has their own, by the way, some more, some less, obviously. We continue. Growing up, in my opinion, maturing as a believer is getting real with your real family. Not a fake family, not make-believe family. My family was good in many ways and terrible in others, as is most families, and lots of it just kind of neutral, just the way my family was. Maturity, in my opinion, is not bringing into your family the previous generation's baggage. But if you can't speak the truth about your family, you will bring that into your family every single time. I'll say it again. Hey, look up here. Let Pastor Warren take a step back. This is not about anybody in this room. Everybody hear me. This is a hypothetical. You grow up in a family where the mother or the father is into how they look. Do you know what that means? Otherwise, they look always looking in the mirror. You grow up in that family, and this is what you say. I don't want to be anything like. Here's your problem. You have learned 10,000 things from observation that leaches into you. I have known families that constantly tell their children, are you getting fat? Your nose is big. What's wrong with your ears? Really? By the way, it is hard to break the nonsense of families. This stuff tends to leach into you. The more you idolize your family, the more this stuff can leach into you. Maturity is not bringing into your family the previous generation's baggage, hopefully, or minimally, is what I would say. And yes, some families are much worse than others. We understand that. Some families are horrific. I would say this is about as bad as it gets. I'm guessing there are some worse, but I would say this is one of the worst you'll ever read. To think this is the foundation of the nation Israel, and you're like, yuck, terrible family. Perfection is not the goal. By the way, perfection is an anti-goal. Trying to be perfect will cause you to be bizarre. Perfection is not the goal, but this is the goal. Growth and health is. Growing into being a growing family and a healthy family where you're learning and able to discuss things and move forward, that's beautiful. Friends, I'll say this and be done with this part of the family. Everyone look at me. If I have learned anything about being a pastor, let me step back. Rolanda, you told me you did physical therapy at one time, some. So if you did physical therapy for guys with bad knees, when I'm out here physical therapy, you know the first thing I recognize? Now, I'm different than some of you. I'm not the first bad knee they have seen. They've seen 10,000 people with knees. Do you know what a pastor sees? He sees problems in families. And he starts wondering, why don't we get a hold of some of that? And the reason is, look at me, hey, we will not deal with reality. You've got to, friends. And you say, well, my family's good. They're grown up. That's all wonderful. But by the way, we pass stuff on. We do. I couldn't believe when I was around families commenting on the daughter's looks. Did you just hear me? The mother was commenting on her daughter's look. Aren't you getting a little fat? Isn't your behind getting a little big? I don't find that funny. I find that perverted. Hello? Which fixates a young lady on her looks, which then will go through life being fixated on that, and then she will pass that on. Then all of a sudden you got three generations. You passed your filth down. Sad. This is worthy of a lot of thought. Tonight is just a thought-provoking time. Number two, Judah was born into a problematic family. I hope we all recognize that. Number two, Judah was part of the problem. Much. We skip forward to chapter 37. Chapter 37, Joseph, which was the favorite child. Well, let's look at verse 3. Now, Israel, that's Jacob's other name, loved Joseph more than all his children. Now, my family had a set of problems. Look at me. But if my life depended on it, I don't know which is the favorite child in our family. And I can promise you this, if you put Rita and Shirley here, I'll exclude my brother. None of us know who the favorite is because that's not a game. My parents didn't play that game. But I know families that do. By the way, how does it make the other kids feel? Well, let's look. Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And just so everybody knew he loved him more, don't get caught up in what this means. The King James says he made him a coat of many colors. All it means was he dressed him in a way where everybody knew, here's Dad's favorite. Verse 4, and when his brethren saw that their father loved him more, they were so happy. Then all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And then later, so man, this is just a quagmire, a mess. Verse 5, Joseph dreamed a dream. Now, I have always wondered, we don't have time to discuss it tonight, should he have told his brothers the dream? That I don't know. By the way, the dream was God revealing the future to Joseph, and I think part of the way Joseph made it through all of his imprisonment from age 17 to age 30 was God had given him some understanding of what he was going to become and the role he was going to play. He didn't know how it was going to work out. That was part of the center, God-centeredness. Joseph got it. Well, but his brothers didn't like that dream much. It says, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. Now, I'm skipping much. Verse 11, and his brothers envied him. Verse 18, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to, what's that in modern English? Just kill him. Yes. Oh, that's nice. You're going to kill your brother. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Verse 20, come now, therefore, and let us kill him, murder him, cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. By the way, his dream, everybody look at me, what was his dream really? His dream is exactly what he ended up doing, which was what? He didn't understand it. But down the road, God elevated him so he could save the Jewish people. They're trying to stop that dream. Good luck on that one. Well, verse 21. Now, you're going to see something that's going to be important in a little bit, so stick with me. It says, and Reuben heard it. Who was the oldest son, oldest child? Reuben. So Reuben should have been the natural leader. Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Verse 22, and Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So at this time, Reuben had inklings that maybe I could save Joseph. Judah comes along. Remember I said he was part of the problem? And Judah said to his brother, what profit is it that we slay our brother or kill him and conceal his blood? Come. And let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let's make some money off of him. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brother were content. So Judah, when he grows up, he not only was born into this dysfunctional mess, he also had held on to this dysfunctional mess. I heard this, by the way, I heard this statement. I don't know who invented this statement, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree or roll far from the tree. Jenny, do you know who I heard it from? Do you remember? You were there, but you probably don't remember. I heard this first from Dr. Yuri Bobchuk. I heard this in Ukrainian. And can I tell you something? The apple usually doesn't fall far from the tree. Unless it does. Unless it does. And only God can change direction, friend. Judah is following right in the path of the garbage in his family. Well, I'll just read these verses because I want everybody to have a little bit of hope. Verse 10 of 1 Corinthians 15. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. and his grace which was bestowed upon me was not in vain. But I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Friend, I do believe that God can change us. Number three, everybody look at me. We're going to read. By the way, the entire night is reading. Does everybody know that? We're just reading a story. What kind of family was he born in? Very problematic. Was he part of the problem? Because until God gets a hold of you and changes things, you tend to reproduce. By the way, the normal response is you either reproduce what you grew up around or you react to it, which is just as bad. You do some kind of overreaction. Neither one are healthy. Well, now, for the younger people here, Pastor Warren will avoid much of chapter 38. Because it is a, by the way, if you don't read this with this, my first reading was, what is this doing in the Bible? Because Judah was born into this mess. He repeated the mess. And he had, as I say in your notes, he had his own deep problems. Genesis 31. Came to pass at that time that Judah went, by the way, meaning after we sold our brother and told our dad a lie, he went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite. Can I ask you a question? Were the Jewish believers supposed to marry Canaanites? He finds a certain woman, a Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And what does he do? He took her and went in to her, and he has children. That's nice. I'm going to skip this because I cannot read it in public. Verse 6, it says, and Judah took a wife for her firstborn, whose name was what? Tamar. Now, I'm skipping a whole bunch intentionally. Everyone look at me. Later on, Tamar doesn't have a husband because her husband is killed by God. Tamar wants a husband. Tamar hears that Judah is passing through this way. Everybody up here, passing through this way. By the way, and the language is really creepy. So let's read. Verse 15. And Judah, passing by her way, he thought her to be, he took her for Elezonah, which is the technical term for a prostitute or a harlot. Technical term. Now, if I'm going to ask you, men, if you saw a prostitute, would your first response be what Judas was? Some of you aren't sure. Let's keep reading. It says, he thought her to be a harlot, and that's a technical word, zonah, which is a prostitute, because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, go, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. I'm getting creepy up here. Yucky, yucky. And she said, what wilt thou give me that thou mayest come unto me? What? How much do you want to pay? Verse 17. He said, well, I will send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, well, you know, he didn't live there. How did she know she was going to get paid? So she just asked the next question. Wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? And he said, what pledge shall I give thee? And she said, everybody look at me. By the way, you see that ring? There's only two of them in this church family like it. She has one and I have one. Hello? Give me your ring. Now, you could possibly have a bracelet or something like this. I got a watch the church gave me. Give me your watch and give me your staff. And then Judah did what? Well, let's keep reading. It's kind of gross. Let's go ahead. It says, all right, so thy signet, thy bracelets, and we don't know exactly what bracelet is, but something that wrapped around, and thy staff in thy hand. And he gave it her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. And by the way, she was his daughter-in-law. And she arose and went away and laid by her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood because she was mourning being a widow. Verse 20. And Judah He's conscientious in this part. He sent the kid by the hand, not child, you know, probably a goat or something, by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hands. He wants his ring, his bracelet, and his staff back. But it says he found her not. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, where is, he doesn't use the word Zonah. Look at me. Now it's getting down to where religion gets involved. He uses the word from, for few of you that have heard me say this, kadosh, from the word for holy. It's a, are you ready? Send that, well, let's read the verse and then I'll explain it as we read. Let's just read the verse again. He says, then he asked the men of that place saying, where is the harlot? But it's not Zonah, it's the word kodeshay, which is the word for a female, listen, sacred prostitute. That was openly by the wayside. So he's now even telling his friends a lie that I guess it was wrong to go to a pure prostitute, but if you go to one that's religious, I guess that's okay. And they said, well, there was no, there's no same word, kadosh, kodeshay. There's no harlot here in this place. And he returned to Judah and said, I cannot find her. And also the men of that place said that there was no sacred prostitute in this place. And then Judah says, well, let her take it to her, lest we be shamed, because behold, I send this kid and thou hast not found her. All right, I got a question. Are you all comfortable so far? Are you feel creepy so far? I got news for you, friend. You read this story and you get out of the religion and you read the arc of this story. When you're at this place, you're almost to the bottom of the barrel. We're coming to the bottom of the bottom next. Verse 24. Came to pass about 3 months after. Remember, she had conceived. She got pregnant. Then it was told Judah, saying, hey, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, had played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with what? By this activity. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be. Verse 25, and when she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law saying, oh, by the man whose these are, am I with child? And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these? The ring, the bracelets, and the staff. This is as low as you go. Judah is caught. By the way, Judah says, burn her. Have you ever been around self-righteous people? They're very good at being self-righteous towards others. Oh, man, judge them. I still remember Josh Kerr. God is testing me. Judging you. No, we don't play that game. Well, that's as low as it gets. Where's the change? Well, I don't know where the change is. I know where the change occurs in the text. We do not have anything about the change in between. Everybody look at me. When we start in the very beginning of this family, he's born into a family of polygamy, probably two wives, two concubines, jealousy, all this dysfunctionality. We know later, when Joseph is 17, he's part of the problem. Chapter 38, which is just a short time later, he's got bigger problems than that. The next time we really see him individually is chapter 44, number 4. And by the way, things have changed. Judah now deals with the problem in a Christ-like manner. I don't know what changed him. I can only believe this. Only God can change a person's heart. I cannot. Verse 11. This is, remember, for, you know, can I say this to everybody? This is the passages you skip over. I found that commentaries skip over them because they don't know what's going on. Look at me, please. Joseph has been introduced to his brothers. Yes. His brothers have come down for food. Joseph does all kinds of, did you just read it? Weird stuff. Because he knows who the favorite child is. Look at me. He's testing his family from the get-go. He knows exactly who the new favorite is. So he gives the new favorite special things. This goes through a whole process. Finally, he's going to take and trap the new favorite, which is his younger brother, son of my right hand, Benjamin. Mm-hmm. And he puts money in the bag, and he puts some kind of, I don't know what it is, my special vase in the bag. And they take off. And all of a sudden, they get caught. And what are they going to do with the brother? They bring him back to Joseph. And Joseph, of course, they don't know who Joseph is. And Joseph, look at me, is still testing them. He only wants to know one thing. You sold me into slavery. Listen, will you do the same for Benjamin? Did you hear me? You sold Joseph, will you sell Benjamin? By the way, there would have been no reconciliation if something hadn't changed. And here's what's interesting. By the way, you could read this story for about 100 years and skip it every time. Who was the oldest brother? One more time. Reuben was in charge in chapter 37. Something drastic has changed, but chapter 44. Verse 11. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground and opened every man's sack. And he searched and beheld at the eldest. By the way, they knew the ages. He started at the oldest and left off at the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then the brothers rent their clothes and laid at every man his ass and returned to the city. They're nervous. My thoughts in your notes quickly. This is the crux of the story. Judah, we'll see in a moment. Judah is now the leader of the story. That's the reason later on when it says some things about Reuben and Judah. Something has transpired good in Judah's life. He has drawn away from the stupidity. By the way, the two tribes that stayed in the south, the other 10 tribes went to the north at the split after Solomon's death. The two in the south were Levi and Judah. By the way, both descendants of Leah. Judah is now the leader. And I find Judah somehow, we don't know the details, is a changed man. Benjamin is caught. What will Judah do? What will the other brothers do? And this, I say, Judah now deals with a problem in a Christ-like manner, because you start to see what you see in other stories. Somebody stepping forward, being willing to take someone else's place. So verse 14, Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, for he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph, by of course, because they're afraid, Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you have done? Watch you not? Don't you know that such a man as I can certainly divine? No, that isn't true. He's been setting them up, but he hasn't revealed himself yet. Verse 16, and Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? And then, of all the brothers, Judah steps up. Can I ask you what leadership is? Leadership isn't saying I'm the man. Leadership, by the way, sorry, Filipinos, isn't being the oldest. None of that helps you. Leadership, in all cases, is one thing. You step forward and you take responsibility. Hello? You take responsibility. Judah is now the leader. He steps forward. He's not the oldest child. He's not even close. But he steps forward. He came near unto him and said, O my Lord, meaning addressing Joseph, not knowing who he is. Let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word in my Lord's ear, and let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou art even as Pharaoh. Verse 29. And if you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, you shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Now, I've skipped forward in the story for time, but he's basically saying, if Benjamin doesn't come home, Jacob is going to just fall apart. Verse 30. Now, therefore, when I come to thy servant, my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die. And thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant upon our father with sorrow to the grave. And here is the whole story. And here's how you know something has radically changed. Here, by the way, you don't know it by people talking. He's now stepping forward, solving a problem in a Christ-like way. He says this, For thy servant became surety, a guarantee, a pledge for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I will bear the blame to my father. Everybody? Forever. Now, therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord. Otherwise, please, he didn't know who Joseph was. He says, please, don't take Benjamin. Let him go home. I will take the punishment that you were going to give Benjamin. Let the lad go with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father? By the way, I spent a lot of time on my vacation. It's not a vacation I recommend. Reading the book of Philemon. The book of Philemon is all about a runaway slave coming back. And by the way, you can read it in a couple ways, and both of them are good, but the beautiful statements are the ifs in your notes. Same ideas. Paul says to Philemon about Onesimus, if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. You see the Christ-likeness taking the place? And he says, if he hath wronged thee or oweth thee aught, put that on my account. You have exactly the same thing in this text. All right, we're going to finish now. Everyone look at me. Let's summarize. Are you all with me? Is this a simple story? Yes, it's a very simple story. It starts with a family which is problematic. Yes? The next mention of Judah, he's part of the problem. He's willing to sell his... By the way, the reason Joseph went to Egypt is Judah. Now, some of the other brothers would just soon kill him, and Reuben kind of wanted to protect him. Third story, I hate to even mention it. He has some deep problems of his own. He has no problems marrying a Canaanite. He has no problems walking by the way and seeing a prostitute. And he has no problem condemning his daughter-in-law for what he's part of. Somewhere between there and here, the man's changed. Now, he is willing to give, look at me, to give of himself like Christ did to make a difference for Benjamin and for his dad. Oh, by the way, you know what happens in chapter 45, don't you? The next verse, Joseph reconciles with his brothers. Why? Because Judah has proved they will not do to Benjamin what they did to me. They, at least Judah, the leader, has changed. We come to the very last part. God elevated Judah far beyond the problems. When you get to the end of the book, verse 49, verse 3, is Reuben. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. I cannot read that verse without thinking about a person that has had connections to this church all 30 years I've been here. I didn't say they were in the church. First time I met them, I realized they had a lot of ability and they were unstable as water. By the way, Reuben never excelled because he never grew, never dealt with the issues. Verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. They had their own problems, but you come to the very last. You've had a long arc. From a very bad family to some terrible choices with Joseph to the very bottom, the worst thing. And then somehow out of the blue, we see Christ-likeness. I'll take Benjamin's place. I'll take the punishment. If he owes anything, put that on my account. You hear Christ-likeness. And then the Lord elevates him. And for the rest of the Bible, by the way, look at me. The rest of the Bible, Jesus has to come from the tribe of Judah. And he has to come from the family of David. Look at the text. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. It's even acknowledging already Judah is becoming the leader. And in the kingdom, when the kingdom comes with Saul, David, and Solomon, the Judah is going to be center. Let's just skip to the very last point, verse 10. Thy scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of his people be. And one day, the ultimate descendant of Judah, the Lord Jesus, will come and gather his people together. Father, thank you for this time tonight as we have looked at the big picture of the man named Judah.